Prabhupada, Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada. Om Vishnupada Paramahamsa Paribhaja Akachaja Astu Tarasata Sri Siman His Divine Grace Abhay Charanaravinda Bhakti Vedanta Goswami Shri Prabhupada Ki Ananta Koti Vaishna Vrinda Ki Rantara Shrimad Bhavatam Ki All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Guranga. Glories to you, Srila Prabhupada. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we are reading from the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the 10th chapter, the 10th verse. I wonder if there's something prophetic about that. The name of the chapter is The Deliverance of the Jamal Arjun Trees. Deva Samjitam Apyante Krimi Vid Vasma Samgitam Bhuta Druk Tadkrite Svartang Kim Veda Nirayo Yataha Deva Samjitam Apyante Karmi Vid Bhasma Samjitam Bhuta Druk Tat Krite Svartang Kim King Veda Nirayoyata Deva Samgitam Apyante Krimi Vid Bhasma Sangitam Bhuta druk tat krite svartang Kim veda nirayo yataha Deva samjitam apyante Krimi vid bhasma sangitam Bhuta druk tat krite svartang King Veda Narayo Yataha Vaishnavas Deva Sangitam Apyante Krimi Vid Basma Sangitam Tadrukta Kute Kartam Kim Veda Nirayo Yata Kim Veda Apyante Kim Veda Basma Samgitam Bhuta Druk Pit Kite Svartam Kim Veda Nirayo Yata Deva Sangitam Apyante Kimi Vim Bhasma stationaries. The body, now known as a very exalted person, like president, minister, or even demigod, api, even if the body is so exalted, ante, after death, krimi, turns into worms, vit, or into stool, basma, basma samyutam, or into ashes, bhutadruk, a person who does not accept the Shastric injunctions and is unnecessarily envious of other living entities. Tat krite, by acting in that way. Svartham, self-interest. Kim, who is there? Veda, who knows? Nireya, yata, because from such sinful activities one must suffer hellish conditions. Translation. While living, one may be proud of one's body, thinking oneself a very big man, minister, president, or even demigod. But whatever one may be, after death, this body will turn either into worms, into stool, or into ashes. If one kills poor animals to satisfy the temporary whims of the body, one does not know that he will suffer in his next birth. For such a sinful miscreant must go to hell and suffer the results of his actions. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. In this verse, the three words, krimi, vit, bhasma, are significant. After death, the body may become krimi, which means worms. For if the body is disposed of without cremation, it may be eaten by worms. Or else it may be eaten by animals, like hogs and vultures, and be turned into stool. Those who are more civilized burn the dead body, and thus becomes ashes, bhasma samyutam. Yet although the body will be turned into worms, stool, or ashes, foolish persons, just to maintain it, commit many sinful activities. This is certainly regrettable. The human form of body is actually meant for jivasya tattva jigyasa, enlightenment in knowledge of spiritual values. Therefore, one must seek shelter of a bona fide spiritual master. Tasmat gurum prapadyeta, one must approach a guru. Who is a guru? Shabdhe pare cha nishna tang. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.3.21. A guru is one who has full transcendental knowledge. Unless one approaches a spiritual master, one remains in ignorance. Acharya van purusho veda. Chandogya Upanishad 6.14.2. One has full knowledge about life when one is acharyavan, controlled by the acharya. But when one is conducted by Rajagun and Tamagun, one does not care about anything. Instead, one acts like an ordinary foolish animal, risking his life, mrityu samsaravartmani, and therefore continuing to go through suffering after suffering. Nate viduk svarga katim hi vishnu, Bhagavatam 7.5.31. Such a foolish person does not know how to elevate himself in this body. Instead, He indulges in sinful activities and goes deeper and deeper into hellish life. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namane Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pichani Nidhisesa Sunivadi Prasthachati Sutani Mukam Krati Vachalam Bhangam Nanayate Girinakri Pacham Aham Bande Shri Guru Dinadhanam Vanshakalpaturubhis Chakripa Sindhudevi Chapatitanam Pahanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha. So here's an example of guru means heavy. Because in this day and age, very often, we have this idea that discipline or meting out the truth is not really, we shouldn't really do that. Everybody has their own truth, or some aspect of the truth belongs to everybody, and we should hear other people's truth and honor other people's truth. But there is an absolute truth. And the Acharya, the spiritual master, he's heavy with that knowledge, with the Veda, with the absolute truth. And for those who have the good fortune of coming in contact with him, they get that truth. And sometimes that truth feels good, and sometimes that truth doesn't necessarily feel good, at least initially. It pinches. Like Prabhupada gives the example, I think someone gave it at class. He gives several different examples of a child may be sleeping, or someone may be sleeping, and the mother may have to pinch him or shake him or rock him to get him up. It's time to go to school. I don't want to go to school. It's hot out today, and there's mosquitoes, and I'm warm, I'm cold, comfortable, I'm in my air-conditioned house, or I'm snug as a bug in my blanket, whatever the season may be. I have my comfort now, and I don't really want to get up. But you have to get up. Get up. If you don't go to school, you'll be a useless bum for the rest of your life. You have to go to school. You have to get up. You have to deal with the reality of the world. Now you know that they're doing studies, and they're actually finding, they're wondering why they're... The studies are inspired by the fact that men in modern Western society don't grow up until they're around 45. And people are kind of wondering why the age of maturity has become pretty much middle age. It used to be, you know, in some religious traditions, at 13 years old, you have what's called a bar mitzvah, or a bas mitzvah, bas Torah. And at 13, you become a man or a woman. You know, there's big celebration. Everybody gives you money and pats you on the back, and you're considered now, you know, big man on campus. But in this society, men are not becoming men until they're 43. What's the problem? Well, part of the problem is that they're spoiled, just like Nala Kuvara and Mani Griva were spoiled, because they have money coming in from the family. The family is taking care of them. And so they're, and the only way they can take advantage of that really is to continue to go to school for a long time. So they become niche students, you know. But the school that they're going to is not teaching them anything terribly valuable, especially if they're liberal arts majors. They're just going to school and going to school and going to school and going to school, and they don't really know what they're going to be. And the statistics say that people change their majors 3 or 4 times in the first 2 years of school. Because it's very difficult to figure out how you're going to market it, right? If you go out on your own, then, you know, I'm sure many people in here have had their parents tell them, if you're living in my house, you live by my rules, right? As long as you're living under my roof and I'm paying the bills, you do what I say. You want to do what you say? Fine, just go pay the bills yourself. But paying the bills is not such an easy thing, right? Paying the bills is complicated. It requires a lot of austerity. You have to take responsibility for your life. You have to make a buck. And you see, I remember when my oldest daughter, she'll kill me if she hears this, but she's not listening, I don't think. It's 3 hours earlier on the West Coast. So she left me when, you know, she was 18 to make her fortune. Because I told her that if you want to pay for your own stuff, go ahead. So she called me up, I remember, from L.A., and she said, Mom, I got a job. I'm making $9, $10 an hour. I'm doing good. I'm doing good. I said, yeah, you're doing great. Go for it, you know, as long as you're in California and I'm in Florida, it's fine. So then, you know, a couple of weeks later, she called me up crying. Mata, I have to pay first and last month's rent, you know, to get the apartment. I have to turn on the electricity. I have to put $150 down. I have to pay insurance. I have to get a car. I have to pay insurance. I have to pay registration. I need money. I said, well, go get it. Figure it out. And she did figure it out, and she did a great job. It took several years of hard work, but she's doing extremely well now, and she's very well situated, both spiritually and materially. But she had to learn her lessons. In this day and age, we don't allow necessarily people to learn their lessons. That's why they don't grow up till 43, because then their parents pass away, and they have the realization that they better get it together. So Nala Kuvera and Manigriva were kind of like that. They had a very rich, influential position. They were demigods, beautiful looking, quite wealthy, big, exalted father, important friends. Even Narada Muni was their father's friend. So their father was connected, and therefore they were connected. And they had opulence, beautiful place, nice association with beautiful women. And as predictable, it went to their head. And they became contaminated by material desire. Now here Narada is kind of looking into the future when he's talking about meat eating. Or you could also think that maybe he's talking about, when he's talking about killing animals, he's talking about killing animals, human animals. Atmaha, the killer of the soul, you know, that the person who's engaged in materialist activities in a Sri Shupanishad is called the killer of the soul. He's a murderer, because the soul is within this body for a purpose. And the purpose of the body is to facilitate the soul's journey back to Godhead. If one uses that that body for the wrong purpose, or becomes misdirected in his goals in life, then he becomes a killer of the soul. He's using the body for the wrong purpose, and ultimately suffering comes, as we see here. But actually, Nala Kuvera and Manigriva were very fortunate, because there was someone who cared enough about them to discipline them. It's interesting, but in the Vedic literature, sometimes we see that someone needs to be disciplined. In Bhagavad Gita, someone needed to be disciplined, right? Arjuna, he was standing before Krishna, and he was supposed to be a warrior. He was dressed in the garb of a warrior, carrying his Gandiva bow, armed and ready to fight. And then he started to lose heart. And he came before Krishna, or he presented before Krishna several arguments which sounded really good. He said, what about my family? And what about my grandfather? And what about society? And the women will be polluted, and the tradition will be lost, and so many bad things will happen, and I'll get sinful reaction. And he was very upset. It's described that he was actually crying. He was very upset. And he had very good arguments. They were from the Vedas. And Krishna slapped him. He said, you're speaking learned words, but actually, you're an impotent fool. Impotent. Impotent is a heavy word when you're talking to a virile Kshatriya man. You know, to call them impotent, you couldn't even take Vairagya. What is it? It's not Vairagya. It's what? Viagra, thank you. She better to take Vairagya. So so that was a slap in the face. You think you're speaking like a wise person, but actually you're speaking like a fool, and you're impotent. You're supposed to be an Aryan. And instead of acting like a person who's cultured and learned and knows the value of life, the purpose of human life, you're whimpering and you're misdirected, you're confused. And he proceeded to speak to him the Bhagavad Gita, the purpose of human life. So also here we see Narada Muni also being a little bit heavy. We also saw, like, Vidura, he went to Dhritarashtra at the end, right? Dhritarashtra mistreated Vidura several times. He allowed Duryodhana also to mistreat him. And ultimately Vidura left. And when the battle took place, he left again. He left before that. They went back and got him. But he left with some degree of finality when the battle took place. He couldn't stand to be around to watch what he knew was going to happen. And he tried to tell them again and again, but they wouldn't listen. So he went on pilgrimage. And then at the very end, he'd been gone for quite some time, and he didn't have to come back. He was wandering and absorbed in spiritual life, in Krishna consciousness. He didn't have to come back. But he saw a situation, or he heard about a situation, which greatly disturbed him. He saw that his brother, Dhritarashtra, was well over 43, but he still hadn't grown up. Right? He still hadn't taken responsibility for his own foolishness. He didn't take responsibility when he was in the kingdom. He was a king, but he didn't take responsibility. He kept turning the responsibility over to people who weren't qualified. And he was so overwhelmed by material desire that he couldn't think straight. And so he wasn't responsible in his position as king. And now again, so attached to his comforts of home, so attached to his wife, his family already eliminated, but even that didn't hit him hard enough to cause him to grow. He lost 100 sons. 99 sons. He lost 99, no, 100 sons. He lost 100 sons, and still he was thinking, but, you know, this is my palace, and, you know, they owe me some deference, and I should be taken care of, and I'm so comfortable here. And so he was living, as Vidura said, like a dog, in the house of the very people that he tried to kill. He tried to kill Yudhisthira in the pond of his, in several different ways, both by complacency, ignoring what was happening, and then even actively sanctioning miscreant deeds. He tried to kill these people. He was wishing their death. And then he had the nerve to live there. And Yudhisthira daily would come and offer him respects. Before Yudhisthira would do anything, he would come and offer respects to Duryodhana, to Gandhari, to Mother Kunti. And he would take his food there. He was allowing them to take care of him. And when Vidura heard this, he thought, this is too much. This is just too much. He's got to grow up. He's got to take responsibility for his spiritual life. I've been giving him good advice all his life, very gently, very compassionately, very nicely, trying to be, you know, all the things you're supposed to be, maybe using empathic listening. It sounds like you're going to make a fool out of yourself again. But ultimately, there was nothing to do but to tell him the absolute truth in words that would shock him into reality. So here we have Narada coming into contact with Nalakuvar and Manigriva, who have become totally enamored by their material position. And becoming enamored by their material position, they're engaging in foolish activities. Activities which are destined ultimately to cause them to lose everything, to lose their high position in society as a demigod, to lose their good parentage, to lose their money, maybe to come back as a lower animal. Who can say what karmically they were destined to create, what bodies they were destined to create? But they were definitely destined to go in a no good place. They were heading in the wrong direction. And so we could have counseled them and tried to help them out. But Narada saw that it was an emergency. He saw that it was an emergency. These boys, now they've committed an offense to me. And, you know, Narada may have thought in his humble self, well, it doesn't matter, they committed an offense to me. But who's the next saintly person that'll come by here and they'll commit an offense? Because they're not even conscious. They're naked and they're not getting dressed. At least the girls, they saw the man and they thought, the sadhu, and they thought, better, oh my goodness, a sadhu, I better get dressed. But Nakula and Manigriva, they didn't even get dressed. They just continue to enjoy, and it's described that even they were thinking, who's this guy? What's he doing here? He should have gone to another place. Why did he come here? This is our place. We're having a good time here. Well, why did he turn this corner? He should have gone the other way. He deserves whatever he gets. If he's disturbed by what he sees, it's his problem. It's not our problem. They were actually thinking like that. So Narada thought, this is an emergency. I have to teach these boys a lesson. But they were heavy in trouble. So getting them to grow up, getting them to understand their responsibility in their lives, their responsibility for their future, took a serious intervention. So he cursed them. But his curse, as we've already heard several times, his curse was actually a blessing, because Narada cared about them. And even though it appears that Vidura was heavy with Dhritarashtra, that Krishna was heavy with Arjuna, that Narada was heavy with Nakula and Sahadeva, he was actually their greatest well-wisher. Their greatest well-wisher. Because he went in where others would not go, and he disciplined them where others would not discipline them. Huh? If someone would have disciplined Duryodhana, if Dhritarashtra would have taken his position as king and actually taken charge of the kingdom, then perhaps the situation that happened would never have happened because of these trees during the civil war. These trees were actually big enough at that time during the civil war to offer shade and shelter to the soldiers who fought here. And so then it started people thinking, wow, these trees, they're important trees. They've been around, they've witnessed a lot of things. In Vrindavan, they say that the trees are sages, maybe in all of India. They say that the trees are sages. And now people are cutting them down randomly. There's definitely going to be reaction for that. The sages are there. They've watched so much. Even Krishna's pastime, Kadamba trees standing there where Krishna tied his belt, the tree where Krishna put his clothes, is there. So many beautiful trees have watched the pastime. So Nakula and Sahadeva were like that. They were trees, and they were standing in the courtyard of Nanda Maharaj and watching all the leela of Krishna, watching it and taking it in because they had been granted consciousness. They were aware of what was going on. So they were seeing, and Jiva Goswami, I mentioned once at the end of a class, that Jiva Goswami, he writes a book called Gopala Champu, in which Nakula and Sahadev are the narrators. But you don't really know that until later on in the book. The book is being narrated by two bards who come together with the residents of Vrindavan every night and tell them what happened in Vrindavan. And they have an all-knowing perspective. They know what everyone was thinking, what everyone was feeling, how everyone was acting, as if they were hundreds of feet up. Well, they were hundreds of feet up. And one day, someone asks them, I believe Nanda Maharaj asks them, who are you? How do you know everything? And then in a very shy, kind of embarrassed way, they say, well, actually, we were these two trees that were standing in the courtyard of Nanda Maharaj and of you. And then Krishna came and pulled us down, and we were Nakula and Sahadeva. And now we're here to narrate these pastimes because we saw them all. We were witness. We were firsthand witness. So that was the benediction they got. Such an amazing benediction that they were able to witness all the leela of Krishna and his associates. So this idea now in modern society, they have a thing called tough love. Tough love, you know, is like Parents Anonymous, right? Parents Anonymous, you know, they have Weight Watchers Anonymous and they have Alcoholics Anonymous. Well, Parents Anonymous. You call up another parent and you say, my kid's completely out of control. I'm scared to death of him. You know, he's 15. He told me he's going to kill me if I don't let him have the keys to the car, and I'm afraid he'll really do it. And they talk you through it, and sometimes they meet together and they discuss how they're going to be able to give their children what they know they're needing in order to be good people, good citizens, not to just let them be brought up by the gangs in the neighborhood or by the TV or by the advertising world, not to be allowed to just float, but really to parent. It's an upward hill fight because in this society, it's almost a dirty word, discipline. It's almost a dirty word. So we have to be very careful because this knowledge that here, it's, you know, Jai Radhe, when she was, Jai Shri Radhe, she was speaking at her little gathering with her traveling Kumaris. And And she was saying it was a montage. It was a story within a story. That play, it was very nice drama they presented. And it was many lessons in that drama. And there's many lessons here. Because here we have, you know, Narada speaking to Nakula and Sahadeva. That's a nice story. We can read it and look at it from a distance and think, yeah, those guys, they were so materialistic. And they were playing with women, and you know, and they offended Narada. And yeah, that was good that Narada, he gave them such a punishment, but it was good. But then there's us, right? And then there's the society that we live in, who's also overwhelmed by material life, who's living just like them, who's associating freely with women and, you know, doing terrible things in the street and in open public, not dressing properly, not honoring saintly persons, not even honoring their own parents, not living a life of morals. And Prabhupada is instructing us and them and asking us to instruct them in his Bhaktivedanta purports to encourage that they adopt a human form of life, that they take a disciplined way of life, that they monitor the pushings of passion and ignorance and live in a way, if not transcendental, at least human. At least human. For us, sometimes we hear, you know, people come to the Hare Krishna temple and we say to them, we follow four regulative principles here, no meeting, no illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling. Prabhupada even mentioned that one very exalted person, Lord Zetland or whoever, said, oh my God, I could never know sex. I could never do it. It's impossible. So what to speak of the average person is like, oh my gosh, you do that? You get up at 3 a.m. and you chant Hare Krishna and you don't eat meat, fish, and eggs, and you don't have sex, and you don't take not even tea or coffee. One of my friends is just did an interview for a position as a security police officer at Santa Fe Community College, and they had to make sure that he didn't take any drugs or anything. So he said, well, you know, my religious tradition, I don't even smoke or drink coffee or tea. And he said they were visibly taken aback. What? You don't... Not even coffee or tea. We were worried more about you know, ecstasy and whatever else they do these days. I don't know. So Prabhupada is asking us, please introduce some human life, because really the four regulative principles, they're not even spiritual practices. They're just human life. And if we want to come to the platform of human life, we start by those four regulative principles. Those are the pillars of human life, of behaving. Don't even have to chant Hare Krishna or worry about going to Arati, Mangal Arati, Sadhana Bhakti. Just be human. Start there. And then from the human form of life, it's easier to, you become attracted, more attracted to transcendental life. So Prabhupada wanted us, and he, if you read his classes or hear his classes, even in 1968, 67, when he was preaching to the theosophy people, or old ladies in uptown New York, he was telling them about these regulations, about meat eating, about living a life of discipline and not allowing the senses to go wild. So here we have a very undisciplined society. Money is the barometer by which people are judged as great. The more money you have, the greater you are. And then on the other side of the pole, the less money you have, the more slovenly you are, the more irresponsible you are, the greater you are in the eyes of those who like that kind of stuff. But neither one is great. Money doesn't make you great. Lack of money doesn't make you great. What makes you great is your character, the way you live your life, and ultimately the fact that you're willing to sacrifice this one life for the service of Krishna. And by sacrificing one life, just Prabhupada said, just this one life. You've been so many lives already, dogs, cats, camels, asses, different kinds of human beings. You've been so many. Just take this one life and give it to Krishna. Just give it to Krishna. Let Krishna direct your wanderings. Offer your life as a service to the Supreme Lord. And then you truly become great. Greatness is not measured by, and Prabhupada was talking about, how many credit cards you have. Or in Bengal, they say that, you know, women keep their keys tied on their sari. And I used to do that, but every time I offer obeisances, they'd clunk on the floor. So I don't do it anymore. But they say in Bengal that you judge the wealth of a family by how many keys the woman has on her shoulder, right? Because she has to keep everything locked up, so she has many keys. So she wears her wealth tied to her sari, or at least a symbol of her wealth. There's also bangle bracelets and other indications, but these keys, they show, I have a palace, my palace has many doors, and no one gets in except if I open them. So it's a testimony to her position and her power. So we're not interested in that kind of position and power. We're interested in being Krishna's servant, and we can become great by being small. Trinada peace in Ichena Tadori Vasahishnu Namanida Manidena Kirtaniya Sadahari. Then we can chant the holy name of the Lord constantly. So I'll stop there. Anybody have questions? Yes, Mahananda Prabhu.
Yeah, in the beginning, you talked about killing animals and then incurring the reaction to that. Mm. I was reminded of another verse in the Bhagavatam, in the chapter of this subterranean planets. Mm. And in that verse, it says that insignificant creatures like mosquitoes and flies and things like that, that they have no discrimination, and they were actually put on earth to torment the conditioned living entities.
To make sure we don't get too comfortable here.
Right. And then it says that the Brahmins, the Kshatriyas, the Vaishyas, that they're on a higher level, and they know what it's like to be killed, and it's and they know better. So they're not allowed to kill any of those creatures. And
well, Prabhupada showed us a different example. At times that he would wait until a mosquito bit him or something, uh-huh. And then he would say, okay, now you can kill it, and it's an aggressor. But he wouldn't let us intervene if they weren't aggressors.
That answers my question, because anytime I read that verse, and when Prabhupada talks about the verse, he says, and it's really instructive verse, and it's very interesting, you know, I should never kill a mosquito or anything. And every time I bring that up, people say, oh no, mosquitoes are aggressors. They can be killed.
But they can't be killed wholesale. Prabhupada never condoned the wholesale killing of any living entity. That if the mosquito is an aggressor, you can kill it, but you can't, like when Dhruva killed the yakshas, you know, he started killing thinking that he was going to avenge the death of his brother, and then he just got into killing, just like, let me at him. And Lord Brahma had to stop him and say, wait a minute, you're going too far here. These people are innocent people. They didn't do anything to you. You don't have a right to kill them, so we don't have a right to just, you know, if there's a reason, even for our restaurants, Prabhupada, because the health department would close us down if we had too many other living entities living with us in the restaurants. So Prabhupada told us we could do that, otherwise we wouldn't be able to have restaurants. And then Prabhupada also tells that incident of seeing Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur kill a snake, and then him thinking, wait a minute, why is this, you know? And then he thought, but I'll find out eventually. And then he saw in the Bhagavatam a verse where it says the saintly people are actually pleased by seeing snakes and scorpions killed because they are aggressors without provocation. They'll bite you. We killed a water moccasin in our property yesterday. Oh, I don't know about that. Chivik Rampavu? Yeah. Hare Krishna. It works. It's on, but it's not very loud.
I think the battery
We need good examples. So be a good example, and then by your example, everything gets better. A rising tide rises all ships. If Mangalarti were really ecstatic and fun every day, then, you know, lots of people would come, and if word gets out that we're having a good time at the Mangalarti party, you know, and we also have to take into consideration that different people have different needs and different people have different circumstances, and we have to honor that also. Because I've discovered that some people who previously, even myself, you know, criticized people who didn't, and then you get into a situation yourself where you see your body can't do it anymore, or your working situation or your children's situation prevents you from doing what is visible, and so you do your sadhana, but you do it in a way that's maybe less visible. So we have to be respectful, but at the same time we have to be disciplined. So that discipline has to be there, and we should encourage each other to put that discipline into our lives in whatever way we have to put it into our lives. But the discipline has to be there. It may not look the same for everybody, but the discipline has to be there for everybody. To go back to Godhead. I just want to check the woman's side. Does anybody have any questions over here? Sita, I'm going to get through a class without you asking a question. I must not have said anything worth hearing. Hare Krishna.
Shanataji, very nice class. Also, you were saying with Nalakovaya and Manigrave, when they were, you know, the wrong thing, Narad Muni was a very good friend of his dad, and he sees it's important for him to chastise those boys and put them together. Like here in our community, like little kids, so like you will see like these kids do wrong things. You can't tell me. You can't tell me. You're not my parents. Mm-hmm. You know, I feel very bad sometimes that, you know, seeing these kids doing wrong things and, you know, you can't tell them anything. I guess the way that everyone grew up here.
Yeah, well, it's also a matter of, Narada saw this was an emergency situation. These boys were so far out. I can empathize with, you know, not wanting everybody. There's 700 plus people in this community, and if all 700 of them decide to discipline your kid's going to be a neurotic mess. But at the same time, if I see a kid in a dangerous situation, like once I came out of the Sunday feast and there used to be, maybe there still is, I didn't notice, a big yellow crane kind of in front of the barn, and it was dark and these boys were climbing up on that thing, and I didn't wait for one second. I stopped my car, I pointed my headlights at the thing, and I said, get down from there right now. You know, I have experience. My son fell out of a tree, broke his neck, and he's been a quad ever since. Today's his 43rd birthday. So when I see people in danger, then I'm going to say, I don't care, you know, you're not my parent, I'm not your parent, you're going to fall and break your neck, get down from that place. So if it's an emergency, then you intervene. If it's not, maybe you want to talk to the parent, you know. Okay, 2 minutes or less, because it's 9 o'clock.
Say that there's a... Sanatana Goswami gives what is the conclusion of the shiksha of Narad Muni. He said the humility has to develop. Every sadhu has only one objective, that humility means self-identity as an eternal servant of Krishna who has sent his own associate in a form of guru. Mm-hmm. So that identity has to be revived, which begins with humility, and then it next one is surrender. And then next one is the utility of Jukta Bhairagya, whatever. They had the body they did not use. And then finally is the Krishna is the merciful, Karunamay and Leelamay. Mm-hmm. So these four things is realized. That's the only purpose Narad Muni had. Mm-hmm. So in Vidura's case, you have explained nicely, but Prabhupada mentioned twice in the purport in first canto that where Vidura was not happy, even though he took Dhritarashtra and Gandhari as a disciple, you can say, because they did not develop full humility. As a result, they only got moksha, liberation. They never became pure devotees.
But at least they made advancement.
Yes.
Finally. finally, yes. Right? If they would have listened way before, then maybe they would have had more success, but they didn't listen.
But that we see also here sometime. Oh, I know Mother Lakshmimani, I see her so long. So Dhritarashtra also thought, in Prabhupada's purport is very significant, he did consider Vidura like his brother, mm-hmm. but that's not the spiritual realization. Vidura mm-hmm. was so advanced, he was eternal associate who came as a Jamaraj and became a now Vidura.
But we have to come to that. Like Arjuna, when he didn't see Krishna as his guru, when he saw Krishna as his friend,
yes.
then he couldn't learn anything. He had to come to the point of Shisha, you know, taking Shisha. Please instruct me. I'm a soul surrendered unto you. Now the thing changes and okay, wham, get it together. Yes. So, you know, sometimes our best friends are the ones who are going to tell us, but we have to realize that they're more than just friends in the colloquial sense in order for them to... And I actually was reading and Prabhupada said... Oh, I have it here, I think, somewhere. But how do I find it? I don't know. I always make all these notes and I never look at them.
Like in the four.
Prabhupada, anyway, yes. He says, Prabhupada, yes, the student who is more chastised is more advanced. Guru more murka deke kariva shashana. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, my spiritual master saw me as a grand fool, therefore he has chastised me. That is the position. The more we remain a grand fool, the more we may advance in spiritual consciousness. So, Prabhupada only chastised those who could take it. You know, if you were advanced, I remember here once, Shruti Kirti and I can't remember. Hari Sari, thank you. I was remembering his other name, Sannyas name. Anyway, the two of them were having an argument or a competition who got more chastised by Srila Prabhupada, who made the stupidest mistake and got chastised more. And they were having their competition, and finally Hari Sari told a story about how he locked Prabhupada in his apartment upstairs on the second floor of his house in Vrindavan, and Prabhupada couldn't get out to go to the bathroom, and he was screaming out the window until finally someone heard them, and then they got Hari Sari. And Prabhupada, because, you know, in India, they close the door by sliding a bar. And after a while, sometimes it gets habitual, so you just walk out of the room, you just slide the bar. And so Hari Sari slid the bar. Prabhupada was inside. And he went away, and Prabhupada was locked in there. So then he told that story, and he went. And Prabhupada was yelling at him, and then Shruti Kirti said, you won. So you got chastised the most. So we get the mercy the most, right? And when you get chastised by the guru, when the guru feels that it's either an emergency, he has to save your life, or he feels that you're surrendered enough to hear the truth, that you're going to take the truth and you're not going to say, oh, who are you to tell me? Then that's mercy. That's Krishna's mercy, Guru's mercy. I have to stop. It's 9:00. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.